Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, December 29th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, I think we have an interesting program for you. We are talking about a new reality today. It's virtual reality. We'll take a look at this unique technology that is being used in more and more ways. They even broadcast a presidential debate in virtual reality this year. Actually, I think the whole presidential campaign was virtual reality this year. Williams College professor Morgan McGuire is in the studio today to answer your questions about VR. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. Virtual reality, your calls, your emails, all coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today we're taking a look at virtual reality, and here to talk about this eerily realistic technology is Williams College professor Morgan McGuire. He's an associate professor of computer science at Williams who has contributed to video game franchises such as Call of Duty at Marvel Ultimate Alliance. McGuire also runs Williams' Computational Graphics Research Program, and we welcome your calls today. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Professor McGuire, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ray. It's great to be here on Vox Pop.
Nice to have you here, and it's something I know very little about, but after watching your lecture on YouTube, I learned a lot more and just how much goes into this. Before we talk about virtual reality, let's spend the next lifetime and talk about what is reality. That's a great way to start the show.
Okay, so I've been living in reality for about 40 years.
You think?
That's a great question. There are a number of people, and to me this is a little bit out there even by my standards of creating new realities, but there are a number of people who ask the question, how do we know we're living in reality? How do we know we're not living in the Matrix in a computer simulation? And part of the argument is if you look at the arc that technology has made, the arc that media has made from radio, television, film, stereo film, video games, if you keep following that line forward, don't we get to a point where we can't tell the difference?
And so that's where you come in. And you've done amazing work. I watched listened to some of Jim Lavulis's pieces that he did with you. Tell us about your work at Williams and where it is right now.
So we have a great lab at Williams College. It's been here for 10 years. And I work in collaboration with Activision here in Albany. They have a studio, Vicarious Visions, and with NVIDIA Research, which was based in California. And they're one of the big graphics card vendors.
Sure.
And we've collaborated on a number of projects, both special effects for video games today, new technology for making tomorrow's video games, for making the new graphics cards, the new engines, and then technology that's a little further out, and that's where the virtual reality aspect comes in, where it goes beyond just making new special effects, making things look more realistic in a video game, and moving on to what if the world wraps around you so that you can't look away from the TV because the TV is part of what you're wearing on your head, and everywhere you look, you see the world. What if instead of holding a joystick, you actually just move your hand and you have 10 fingers, and if you want to walk, you just walk forward instead of pressing a button?
That is virtual reality.
So that's what we're trying to build for virtual reality, is that kind of an environment, like what you see in science fiction films, where the computer completely creates an environment around you, and then you interact with it just as you would in real life.
To what end?
So there are a lot of applications. Entertainment is the first thing that comes to most people's minds. This is a way of making video games and movies even more immersive, even better. And I think that's a really important driving application. I think it's the one that's going to make the technology that we're seeing already coming out today. So, you know, many people were receiving gifts this week of virtual reality headsets. Entertainment's going to drive a lot of that. I don't see that as the long-term end goal. I think it's bigger than that. I think that would be like saying we had Game Boys 15 years ago and we played video games on them, and so that's what mobile technology is about. And I think we all know today that mobile technology is pervasive. It's every aspect of your life and work. not just entertainment. Entertainment is a really great wedge for new technologies.
So you and we're talking today with Professor Morgan McGuire of Williams College, and we're talking virtual reality. If you want to join in, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. As technology improves and the visual fidelity, as you may or may not call it, improves, it gets closer and closer to what we think of as reality. And is there a point in your lifetime, in my lifetime, in our children's lifetimes, where you won't be able to tell the difference?
So I'm working very hard, as are many scientists and engineers around the world, to get to a point in 5 years where you can tell the difference, but it's good enough, in the sense of, if you go and watch a movie with computer graphics special effects today, if you watch really carefully and pick it apart, you can tell the difference sometimes. So if you go watch the new Star Wars movies, you can tell which are the computer graphics characters and which are live actors, but it's pretty hard. And I think we can get to that point in 5 to 10 years. We can get to the point where most of your senses are there, and then you realize, oh, the smells are a little off, or things like that. I think probably 25 to 50 years out, to the point where you really can't tell.
The smells, the touches, these things are much more difficult than sound and visual. Tell us where you are in that technology.
So visual, as you pointed out, we're the most sophisticated in right now for simulation, and partly because it's the least invasive. Your eyes just aren't very good. So your eyes see something like three different colors, and they mix them together, and they have something like pixels in them, and that kind of matches roughly what we have for displays today. So visual, as you point out, we're doing pretty well. We need some horsepower to drive it. Sound, it turns out, you've only got two ears, but you have thousands of different frequency receptors, and you have a very good sense of whether sound is being heard through your head, whether it bounced off a wall. We're extremely sensitive to that. Smell is even more complicated. Your nose has thousands of different receptors, and it's down at the level of sort of individual molecules that you can sense. So we're not as good as, say, something like a dog or a cat, but it's really hard to match a smell.
Assuming you can match a smell, how do you transmit a smell? They did smell-o-vision, what, in the 50s or the 60s. But how, short of hardwiring somebody's brain, how do you do that with the vast quantity of different smells that are out there? How would you do that?
So that's a great question. As I said, smell is hard, and it's not like for light I can mix three different colors together. For smell, I don't think we can get away with mixing 50 different smells. You might get away with mixing 200 different smells, and it's obviously messy, right? You're going to be really emitting something. I think smell will probably be one of the last things that works. And if you look at what happens in food science, what's happening with perfume, it's a really, really complicated area for simulating smell. We don't have good ways of digitizing smell, for measuring smell in the wild. It's still kind of a black art.
Our guest today is Morgan McGuire. He's a professor at Williams College, and we talk virtual reality on Vox Pop today. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Let's go to Lou in, where are you calling from, Lou?
Lowville.
Ah, Lowville. You're on there, buddy.
Yeah. Hey, this technology is just fantastic. I've been using it now, you know, as long as it's been out, not in pretty recent history, but usefulness in the adult entertainment industry is quite. As the professor is founding the crossover from his research into that realm of the, because it really does broaden some experiences.
All right, there you go. He's done. All right, Lou's done. Hey, Lou, thanks a lot for that. He makes a point, though. I guess that is a possibility, but there are a range of entertainment possibilities. I'm wondering about the practical possibilities. Training. What about surgery? How about things like that?
Yeah, so there's a huge number of practical applications beyond entertainment.
Yeah.
One of the ones that's obviously close to my heart is education. I'd like to think that there's a lot of value that a teacher adds in a classroom for being a live human being who makes gestures, who sees facial expression, who sees the student slouching in the back and says, hey, I need to engage that person. And I don't think we can do that through video lectures, but I think through virtual reality education, you could suddenly have, you know, the world's best French teacher, the world's best novelist teaching English to students all around the world. So I think that's a huge application, and it has to do with the fact that ultimately humans like communication with other humans. We don't like to watch movies that are still lifes. We like to watch movies that have people or characters that act like people, say in a Disney or Pixar movie. And what virtual reality does for us is it takes all of the aspects of human communication that right now are being lost to technology. So there's a lot of value in face-to-face communication, and we just don't get that through a bad cell phone connection or something, or even a video conference. You're seeing a very distorted view. It's not the same as being physically in someone's presence. And that notion of presence, or telepresence is the technical term in virtual reality, is that you really believe you're in an environment. And what that means is when you interact with another person, you really believe in that person at a low animal level. And that's tremendous for everything from therapy, interacting with a doctor who's trying to diagnose something. If you're performing surgery, I think there's a difference between driving a, you know, robot arm because you're doing emergency surgery in an earthquake victim and the doctor actually feeling like they're present with the patient at the time. And it allows you to deal with computers at an intuitive and instinctive level instead of at the level of buttons and knobs and mouse clicks.
Do we have the processing power to even approach this?
We do. It's been really fantastic, and what's really allowed virtual reality to happen now. So this technology has been around since roughly the 60s is when people started experimenting with it. But you needed a $10 million research lab, and the thing had refrigerator-sized computers. The reason that it's happening right now is two technologies. One is cell phones. And so cell phones have made it so that they're cheap, high-resolution displays and cheap, high-resolution cameras available. Just the economy of scale made it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that technology, we can now build something like a $300 head-mounted display that would have cost several million dollars a few years ago.
And some are out already on the market. We'll take a break here. Morgan McGuire is our guest. He is professor at Williams College, and we talk virtual reality. Love to take your calls. 800-348-2551 is the number, and we'll be back.
Support comes from Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, giving children the education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world. WaldorfSaratoga.org. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. And the Henyon Bakery, Amherst since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com.
Number is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. We talk with Morgan McGuire about virtual reality and you at home. Let's go to the phones. Charles in Albany. Charles.
Yes, hi.
Hi. You're on.
I'm concerned today about the very positive views you're putting forth about virtual reality without much criticism. I haven't been in school for a while, but I don't think there's any programs or many programs in the schools that are bringing up debate about virtual reality. And one thing that I recently realized is that the very word virtual relates to virtuous. And I think that's dangerous in the sense that a lot of children without a critical view of technology come up maybe subconsciously or unconsciously assuming that it's automatically virtuous. And I think that what's happening is that with a lot of people today, there's a distraction level through gadgets. Susan Sontag wrote about this in the 70s when Americans started using cameras instead of their eyes to connect with reality. In other words, trees, real trees, ducks and everything. So I'm wondering if you can talk about that a little bit, about the Pandora side, because I think we're a little bit too much on the positive side these days.
Okay. I will just make an observation, and then we'll let Professor McGuire speak. But there have been these complaints from the inception of any technology. And so when I was a kid, too much stereo, too much radio, this and that, it always seems to happen that us old-timers were always a little bit behind the thing. That said, is there a danger for getting into a virtual reality and not being able to come out? All right, now you go ahead, Professor.
Well, that's a great question, Charles. I'm glad you brought it up. And I think there are two aspects of it. One aspect, which is actually what I was teaching with my colleagues this semester at Williams College in our introduction to film and media studies, is that when any media technology is introduced, whether it's Twitter and Facebook, or whether it's the radio, or whether it's the first introduction of, say, you know, printed broadsides for news, it's important that people use that medium in a critical way. And just as you have to question and corroborate news sources in the way that you need to ask, are the stories and the entertainment that I'm seeing, do they represent the values that I want to be subjecting myself or my children to? You have to do the same thing for video games. You have to do the same thing for virtual reality. And what makes it really interesting for virtual reality, or the next step beyond that, which is called augmented reality, where instead of completely closing off the world, we allow you to see the world through glasses, but we inject 3D objects that appear real beside you in the real world.
To what end? Why would you want to do that?
So there are many applications. The easiest ones to think about are anything that you use a cell phone today for. What if you didn't have to drop out of the real world? What if you see directions projected right in front of you? You just see a line on the sidewalk or on the street instead of looking down at your GPS. What if instead of emailing people, they just appear beside you as a ghost and start talking to you?
Okay.
So any case where you don't want to leave your situational awareness of the real world.
Mm-hmm.
So what's interesting here is that just as we have to be critical of any media, and we have to be careful about both what we're presenting to ourselves, because that affects our own values, and we have to be critical of it in terms of basing decisions on what we perceive in media. In virtual reality and augmented reality, because there's this sense of presence, this sense of your body is treating it as real, even if you cognitively know it's not real, what happens is you remember those things much closer to memories than information that you read about. And you can think about the difference between reading about a movie and seeing the movie, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody has dreams from reading a review of a movie or reading a review of a video game. But you play a video game for 4 hours the night it comes out, and you dream about it all night because your body has somehow internalized that as part of your own experience, not just something you heard about. And so you need to be especially critical when you're adding that kind of immersive experience to your life. You need to remember and be sophisticated about that wasn't real. That was fantasy.
It begs the question 100 years from now, if a ruler that perhaps has nefarious ends wanted to, mind control extraordinarily easy with this technology.
I think the potential for gaslighting that we already see and have seen for hundreds of years through propaganda explodes in this world. And what you're starting to see, the reason that, say, Facebook is heavily involved in this technology, or that all the other major online companies are investing heavily in it, is that this is going to be the medium of communication. It might not come next year. It might be 100 years from now. But at some point, we know that some sort of virtual reality experience is going to be how we communicate just everyday conversations with our coworkers, with our family, but also how we communicate with our governments, how we learn about the world. And the potential for abuse there is the same as it is in, say, social media. It's the idea of taking those kind of experiences and amplifying them. And just like any human communication, we have to be very careful to make sure that that's used in a mostly respectful and safe way.
Morgan McGuire is our guest today. We talk virtual reality on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Matthew in Albany is on. Matthew. Or not. Maybe Matthew. There you are.
I am calling to ask a question about how one might go about choosing what kind of virtual reality experience. I see a lot of commercials lately, especially with, I think it's the Samsung phone. You snap it into a headset. Then there's a various audience of of participants oohing and eyeing at what they appear to be seeing while everyone else around them watches them watch something that they can't see. And, of course, that's very titillating for the commercial viewer, wondering, what are they seeing? What are they seeing? Is there a benefit to one type of device over another? I've done a little bit of research, and I hear things like some are heavier, some are lighter, some have a balance where the weight is less on the front end and more in the headset itself. What are the criteria that you use, and what types of experiences are out there right now?
Morgan, you've tried several of these, but not all, right?
Correct. And there's new ones being announced on an almost weekly basis at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So what won't surprise you is to know that in general, if you pay more, you're going to have a better experience. And the range...
Grief, what are you doing?
Okay, well, that's all right. You can listen to the answer off the air. I don't know what's going on, but go ahead.
And the range at which you can pay goes from something like $15 for Google Cardboard, which is literally a piece of cardboard. It holds two lenses. You snap your existing cell phone in. And for the $15, you get a pretty amazing experience out of that.
Yeah.
To the high end is something like buying an HTC Vive, which will cost you around $800 and needs a really powerful gaming computer to plug it into. Different points along that spectrum, you have Google Daydream, Gear VR, PlayStation VR, and Oculus Rift. So there's a level of price sensitivity, and that's just, at the moment, we're talking about a luxury entertainment item. Right? So this is, nobody is going to be working in virtual reality tomorrow. No one's going to be even video conferencing in virtual reality in the next couple months. So if you have disposable income to go all the way up, you can get a better experience.
Right.
The flip side of that is the content. So there's some content which is in the form of 360-degree movies. And this is basically just an OmniMax film, which is the extension of an IMAX film. And so you're sitting in a fixed position. You can rotate around. You see in stereo. And it's a great experience, especially for something like watching live sports. It's a lot closer to really being there. It doesn't make you the star of the movie. That's not an interactive walk-around kind of experience. At the high end, you do get those kind of experiences where you have hands, you can pick objects up, you can walk around a fantasy world. Maybe there are even other people in that world with you.
Let me just register a complaint before we go to the next call. One of the fundamental issues I have, and I've seen those commercials where the people are gathered around and somebody has the VR goggles on and oohing and eyeing. Doesn't this separate us more as people? Have we lost something in this age of constant texting? And we're all guilty of it. I'm guilty of it. I text my kids. They're upstairs. I say, hey, it's time for dinner. Will you come down? But aren't we losing something by putting on goggles and separating ourselves? Whether or not we get together again in the virtual world, isn't something lost?
So I think, Ray, that unquestionably, we want to be careful about our use of any form of technology. Right? And that form of technology can be, I go to a play with one of my children, and as a result, I'm not looking at my child. I'm looking at the stage. Or maybe it's not a play. Maybe it's a TV show, and I'm looking at a screen, or it's a video game, or it's virtual reality. So I think any form of entertainment, any form of activity, we have to ask, you know, am I actually interacting with the people around me? Or am I using this as a way to avoid human interaction?
Yeah.
And that's something we have to be careful with. And as technology gets more compelling, so as we go from something like a Punch and Judy show to a complete virtual reality experience, it becomes easier to slip into that world and to think that we're having a meaningful interaction and not be doing so. That said, I think one of the great things about multiplayer video games today is they allow people, and in some cases, people who would otherwise be socially marginalized in their physical geographical environment, to make friends, to interact with people who have similar interests, to live in a fantasy world sometimes, but in a fantasy world with real people, as opposed to retreating into oneself. So I think video games have done a lot of wonderful things for people, movies have, and I think virtual reality is in the same category.
Morgan McGuire is our guest. It's Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And Troy in Little Falls. Troy, you're on.
Hey there. This is my first time calling. Sorry.
Hey, that's great.
I was actually wondering, I want to know where the technology exactly is at towards, like, no glasses, no walking around, but more of entering into a altered reality, like a virtual reality in an altered state of mind, like kind of like plugging into the Matrix.
Okay.
So, Troy, I like to refer to the different kinds of virtual reality experience you could have by a couple of key movies, because I think they do a good job of visualizing it. And the world that I'd love to be in, the kind of technology that I think we'll have maybe in 50 years, I would describe as the Star Trek holodeck. So there, you don't put any technology on your body. You walk into a room, everything's embedded in the room. Probably there are holograms that are being projected. Probably there's some kind of force fields that are either electromagnetic, or there are limited things we can do already with lasers to create safe force fields to touch. And you just have the complete unencumbered experience. That's a long ways off. There's the Matrix level, or Total Recall, and this is usually a sort of dystopian thing, where essentially the computer plugs into you. And that's a level that I think we could do in 10 years. It's not clear that there's desire to do that. It's not, you know, I have some reservations, and I hope you do, too.
I think that would be great.
Just jack
entering
me in.
Entering into a video game, keeping your life.
So the distinction I'm drawing is between, is the technology invasive? So is it something like I strap on goggles and I put on headphones and I put on a suit?
That you could take off at any time.
Right. And so that's a level that we're headed for now.
You just plug in.
Right.
But getting to the level where it plugs into your brain, that's something that I think is about 10 years off, and it's not clear that that's something we want to do.
No. Do you suspect that there is a back room somewhere in a military laboratory where they're trying that right now?
So there's some wonderful medical technologies that are used, for example, for helping the blind to see or the deaf to hear. And there are ways that you can deal with, for people who say have lost a limb, where you can have mental control over a robotic limb and you can start to have some limited sensation. And so those are all the kinds of technologies that you could use, if those were developed further, to directly connect to a human nervous system. Effectively unplug your body temporarily and plug into a computer simulation. I think those are fantastic medical technologies, and that's an obvious place we want them to go. It's not clear that the average consumer, like me, doesn't want that to actually happen to their body. So I'm pretty comfortable with goggles for now.
Our guest is Morgan McGuire. It's virtual reality on Vox Pop today. Catherine in Kingston. Catherine, you're on.
Yes, hi. Along the lines of being concerned about where this might end up, about over 20 years ago, I read a book called Otherland by Tad Williams, and it basically was about the perils of getting lost in virtual reality when those sort of helmets are introduced to young children. And, you know, the child is in the game, but they get so far into the game that they can't find their way back out, and they end up dying. And I 20 years ago it seemed fantastical, but it seems like we're closer and closer to, you know, the possibility of that. And my question is our human consciousness prepared for the dynamics of virtual reality?
So that's a
terrific... are we really ready to handle it?
I love this question.
So that's a terrific point. Let me start by working backwards through your question. Are humans ready for this? Is this a technology that we can handle, that we can emotionally handle, that we can handle responsibly? What's interesting is that the reason the technology works is because humans are hardwired to believe, to suspend our disbelief. The reason you can go to a movie and experience that as an exciting story instead of a flat wall with some funny colors on it is that our brains are essentially hardwired to accept new sensory inputs and incorporate them into what's essentially the continual virtual reality within our brains. So we all live within our own bodies, but everything we sense about the world is going to be mediated by our bodies. And so our brains continuously construct from audio, from images, from things that sometimes don't make sense, like optical illusions or where you're mistaking what you're seeing. Your brain is telling you a story, is constructing a reality. And so the reason that movies and video games and virtual reality work is because, in a sense, we're perfectly adapted to take whatever input is coming in and construct a reality from it. Now, the broader question, getting back to the sense of where you started, is this something that's safe? Is this something where we get lost in the virtual world? Right now, as part of my research agenda, it would be fantastic if that was a problem I had to worry about. I'm more worried about problems like, how can I make it so people don't get headaches because the images aren't quite right, or they don't feel motion sick? Or how do I make it so you can walk more than 5 feet without walking into the physical wall in your living room? So we're quite a ways off from not being able to tell the difference and getting lost in virtual reality. However, I think it's an important concern, not because you won't know when you're in the real world or when you're in the virtual world, but because when you spend a lot of time with any media, with movies, with video games, and now with virtual reality, there is a sense where you start to adjust your reactions, where you start to adjust your sense of what's real or what you can do. And you can imagine somebody coming out of an action movie and feeling a little bit like a superhero themselves. You feel kind of charged up. Or you play a racing video game and you get in your car, and then you need to remember, hey, I'm in a real car and I can't drive as aggressively as I do in the video game. And some of that's actually good. Like, I think I'm a better driver. I skidded out a little driving through the snow to get here to Albany today. And I think the thousands of hours I've spent in video games helped that I knew how to pull out of a skid, not because it had ever happened to me in real life, but because that was just my instant reaction. So that's good. However, there's this problem I have on a regular basis. In most virtual reality experiences, your body is simulated as if you're infinitely thin. And as I get older, this sounds like a nice thing, but not infinitely thin. And so what happens is, you know, as you're walking around, you start to cut corners. And once you realize, hey, my shoulders can pass through objects, well, when you're walking around in a virtual world, you start to clip doorways a little bit because it doesn't stop you. It's only if your head hits them. You spend 2 or 3 hours a day in virtual reality. You come out, and the first thing I do is I walk into the doorway every day because I get used to it. That's my sense of my body is distorted. I think if you spent 8 hours a day in virtual reality, that could be a little dangerous, and we need to increase the quality of the simulation, but also we need to think about how it affects your judgment in the real world.
Well, who is doing the research asking how much is too much?
That's a great question. I think it's something that's being looked at in the humanities, it's being looked at by ethicists, it's being looked at by people who do film and media studies. But I think it's also important that when engineers and scientists are working on technologies, and this is one of the things that I like about teaching the liberal arts and something that I address in my books and my videos, is that I think it's important that engineers have a sense of responsibility for their technology. So I can't just say, hey, I just build the thing and it's someone else's job to think about the ethical implications. And so something that you know, it's not always foregrounded, but I think is important in my research agenda, and it's important in the companies that I collaborate with as well, is that there's always a question of, if this technology is going to put somebody out of a job, how do we create another job? If this technology is going to create some sort of dissociation between people, it becomes a technology that sits between people in communication, how do we also adjust the technology so that it'll enhance communication somewhere else?
Our guest today is Morgan McGuire, professor at Williams College. We talk virtual reality. We'll be back, and we will get to many more calls coming up. 800-348-2551. Home stretch, straight ahead.
Support comes from Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road Colony. Locally owned seafood restaurant and raw bar, realseafoodco.com. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York. Specializing in distinctive eyewear, including Zenka from Paris and Coco Song from Italy. Eye exams by appointment. 518-459-2638. Dr. Lucy Chapek, Latham, New York. Plastic surgery dedicated to cosmetic surgery, laser treatments, and minimally invasive facial rejuvenation since 1996. Wishing WAMC listeners happy and healthy holidays. 518-786-1700. And Nine Pin Cider Works, hard cider made from locally sourced apples. Tasting room Wednesday through Sunday, 929 Broadway, Albany. Drink New York apples. ninepincider.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Call-in show, you know, and the number is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Williams College professor Morgan McGuire, and we talk virtual reality. And over to the phones we go. Helen in South Egremont. Helen.
Hi. I never thought I'd call in on a virtual reality.
Well, there you go.
It's interesting because I can see virtual reality being used as an extension in joint replacement surgery. There's software being used now for a scan and then on a computer to replace shoulders, and where the surgeon can, after the, using the 3D scan, can then on the computer decide, do the operation and decide which way to do it, just a regular replacement or a reverse replacement. So I could see this really as a great enhancement of that kind of use. But I have a question about the ethics and morality of the future of this in, let's say, the 50 years.
Okay.
Where you don't know that you're being surrounded in virtual reality, and the implications for population control, and is this kind of control over a human being almost similar to cloning a human being? I mean, I find that a very disturbing
prospect. I'm not sure I get the connection.
Well, but anyhow, about the ethics of not of people not knowing they're in virtual reality,
right?
Because I remember when a wireless mouse was being developed and they were trying to do it. So I can see where that might happen in the future with virtual reality. You don't know that it's happening to you.
All right. Well, Helen, thanks a lot for the call. You want to comment?
Yeah. So, Ray, what I think is interesting is as media has gotten more sophisticated, and we've talked a little bit about, you know, are we ready for this? I think one of the things that's been challenging is, you know, essentially biologically, we haven't changed in 100, 200,000 years. So the difference between us and, you know, the Romans or us and cave people is essentially culture, education, technology. And they need to go hand in hand. So we have people, you know, around the world today, many of them in our own country, which is relatively affluent and relatively well-educated, who are not sophisticated about media, who don't know which newspapers are reporting something that we would consider objective news and which ones are essentially for entertainment purposes, who don't know when they see things on television, the difference between a reality show and a documentary. And so as the technology gets more sophisticated, and we get more sophisticated culturally about manipulating media, there needs to be a corresponding level of education of the population that's consuming it.
But will it happen?
I think that's a great question. I think it's really important that we have more education at every level, and that media literacy not be about can you type or can you use Google, but that media literacy be about understanding critically when is something real, when is it objective, and how do you feel about it.
But a larger question for humanity and the human race is humanity spiritually and intellectually evolved to handle technology? For instance, the atom bomb. We were able to create an atomic bomb. Were we spiritually and intellectually able to handle that knowledge? I mean, is there a point where we have then learned too much?
So every technology, historically, when it's been introduced from iron to atomic, has brought with it a disruption. And there's been, it sometimes takes a long time, hundreds, thousands of years, for us to figure out how do we use this technology so that it's helping us and not hurting us. We worry about climate change. Climate change is a result of things that happened starting around the Industrial Revolution that were tremendously beneficial, but also had some downsides. And we're only now starting to really grapple with how do we deal with this responsibly. I think virtual reality is a technology where the positive upside for humanity is tremendous. And I think where compared to some of the other technologies that we've been not so educated about in the past, it's less dangerous. So I'm confident that humanity is going to learn how to use nuclear power in an effective way, and I think we might possibly learn how to use virtual reality faster than that.
Well, okay, let's go to James in Boston Spa. James, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I've had the privilege recently of being able to deploy a technology designed by UC Davis, which is called a augmented reality sandbox, in which you could manipulate the sand in the box, which changes the dynamics of the projection onto the sand, and it can do water flow simulations and that type of a thing. It's at the new aquarium in Rotterdam. I was hoping that you might be able to elaborate a little bit about the difference between virtual reality and augmented reality, so people can understand the difference between those two concepts.
Okay, thanks, James.
That's a great question,
sure.
James. The technology you described, the sandbox, sounds very interesting. I'd like to see that someday. Virtual reality and augmented reality, these are terms that were introduced originally in science fiction and then became part of a scientific research agenda. So they're used differently in fiction, in marketing of products, and within the research and engineering field.
Mm-hmm.
In the research and engineering field, where they have more strict definitions, they're on a continuum, but the idea is that augmented reality, you are primarily seeing the real world. You're either seeing it through some sort of display or glasses that are essentially a viewfinder for a real-time camera, or ideally you're seeing it through natural optics like eyeglasses.
Mm-hmm.
That's being augmented with a projection onto the glasses or reflected off the glasses into your eye. There are also some technologies that are more or less like the science fiction holograms that you can imagine being used for augmented reality, so where there's something projecting into the world. Most of those are fairly complicated and not likely to be something we see in the near term. But we will see in the near term, Google Glass already came out. This is a very early form of augmented reality.
With some controversy attached.
And I think most of the controversy around Google Glass was around its inclusion of a camera.
Hmm.
So Google Glass essentially acted like a low-quality cell phone display that you're sort of holding up in the corner of your vision all of the time. So that's a very lightweight form of augmented reality. You see text show up there.
Right.
It's not the same as, say, Microsoft HoloLens, which is currently available to early adopters, where you put that on, and within a narrow, centered field of view, you see 3D objects as if they're in the real world.
Hmm.
And today, the image quality is such that it's pretty easy to distinguish. You're not going to be worried about falling through a hole that's rendered by computer graphics. But I think in 10 years or so, film quality is something we'll be able to get there. So the
with your wireless device.
Wireless is an interesting challenge. So the problem with a lot of these things is power. If you think about how hot...
Computational power or battery power?
Battery power.
Ah.
Which becomes computational power. If you think about how fast your battery would run down if you were streaming a 4K 60 hertz Netflix video feed to your cell phone,
yeah,
you'd need a much bigger battery if you wanted to watch that for more than half an hour. Or if you think about how hot your phone gets when you're running a game on it or something. The virtual reality displays today have giant cables attached to them, mostly just so they can provide the power without strapping a large battery to the back of your head.
I got it. Over to Paul in Albany. Paul, you're on with Morgan McGuire.
Yes. Following people's concerns, including yourself, a couple of things. There's so much attention to the sexiness of all of these possibilities. It reminds me of the book Last Child in the Woods. There's so many ways that are factors like this that are taking people's attention away from quote-unquote ordinary reality, and what is there being done to like counterweight that? For example, there's a lot of technology, if you will, that's being developed in experiments with people that are doing yoga and meditation and different things that we can develop internally, psychologically and physiologically, to maximize that, that's not part of the conversation. So that's one angle. And the other angle is we've seen from the last election a bit about fake news, and then so many students don't distinguish news sources and kind of take everything in through social media without regard to discriminating on news sources. And the virtual reality thing seems to magnify that whole dynamic. And what, how is that? That seems to be a very hot issue right now. And I don't know quite how to ask you to put attention on that, but I think that has to be part of the discussion too, as to looking at these things going forward.
Well, thanks, Paul. I guess we appreciate it. Go ahead.
Yes.
So I don't want to get too hung up on the last part because we've hit it a few times.
Yep.
Let me just say I'm old-fashioned, and there's a word, propaganda.
Yeah.
That I prefer to fake news.
Goes back a long time.
And exactly, it goes back a long time, and I think the primary, you know, the problem and the solution are people, not technology. There.
Right.
But on the technology side, the caller mentioned yoga. And one thing that I think has been really great, especially living in the Northeast in winter, is every day for roughly half an hour, I've been rock climbing on this volcanic thing in the Caribbean islands, and I see these little boats below me, and I'm essentially really there. And I'm doing this in virtual reality with a game called The Climb for Oculus Rift. And I'm using my actual hands to grab holds, and I squeeze.
Grab onto a bookcase or something? What do you do?
So you're holding within your hands these two essentially overgrown remote controls.
Ah.
But they wrap around your hand, and they can sense the position of your fingers with some degree of accuracy. It knows at a millimeter scale exactly where your hand is and how it's oriented in space. And the visuals are gorgeous. And I'm sure that in 5 years we'll think they look embarrassing.
Right.
But today it's some of the best visuals that you can see. And being able to have that kind of instant vacation where suddenly I'm not restricted by my geographic location and my activity. And strangely, that activity is, I've rock climbed before and it doesn't really feel like real rock climbing.
Right.
It's a little bit, it's more video gamey. It's an arcade experience. But if you watched me from outside of virtual reality, you would think I was doing yoga.
Oh, interesting.
And so I spend an hour in a blank concrete room that's 65 degrees, and outside there's several feet of snow usually. And yet I'm going through these beautiful poses, I'm using my body, and I'm having this relaxing experience.
So you feel better when you come out of it.
It's fantastic.
Now, in the course of your research and entertainment, how many hours do you have virtual reality headset on a day?
So I think I average now about 1.5 to 2 hours a day. And there have been days when I've spent 6 or 8 hours in virtual reality, and then there are some days when I spend none.
Are there days when you come out of it a little slower?
So
when you take them off?
Two things are going on there. One is that because I'm doing research, most of the time I'm spending in virtual reality is not a perfect consumer experience that's something you
you're letting go.
For.
Yeah.
It's something where I'm actually working on it.
Right. No, I get it.
And it's broken. And one of the jokes in the games industry is that the worst job you can ever have is a video game tester. And teenagers say, what do you mean? You're going to pay me to play video games. It's no, no, no. We're going to pay you to play broken video games and to find the problems. So what I'm spending most of my time doing is being in experiences where, because they're still being developed and I'm working on them, you turn your head left and the entire world rotates right instead. Or where you take a step forward and suddenly you go shooting up in the sky. And so I come out of it a little disoriented frequently. And that's sort of the price of working on these technologies.
Have you had any physical, after X number of hours, you notice any physical headaches, eye problems, anything like that?
So with the best experience, so using very high-end hardware, using publicly released top-of-the-line consumer experiences, something like the Climb VR, or there's another one, Super Hot VR, that I play a lot. In those kind of experiences, I come out feeling a little disoriented, but at the same level you would if you were watching a fast action movie, where it's just you're a little jazzed up, your eyes are adjusting to the light, maybe you're wearing stereo glasses, and not doesn't quite match the way you actually wanted to focus. So in the best experiences, that's going to happen. In the average experience, a little bit of motion sickness is pretty common right now, and a little bit of a headache. And what's happening is that the technology isn't quite tuned yet, and it's just below.
Is the frame rate too low for that?
So the frame rate is what we refer to as throughput, how many frames per second, how fast is stuff coming out. This is easiest to explain if I say, think of an automobile factory. So you've got your Henry Ford, you have assembly line, cars are coming out at a certain rate. But if you watched one car go through the factory, so there might be one car per minute coming out the back of the factory.
Yeah.
But if you look at one individual car from steel to coming out the back as an actual car, it might take it 2 days to go through the whole factory. That's latency. And that's what makes people sick.
Well, I haven't been sick by this program. It's been great having you here, and it went very fast indeed. And we apologize to everybody left on the line. Thanks again to Morgan McGuire of Williams College for being here. By the way, on our Vox Pop page for today's show, there are a couple of links to Jim Lavulis pieces that he did, interviews, and he went on scene at Williams College. I recommend you check those out. I hope you come back. We'll just scratch the surface today.
Thank you very much, Ray. It was great to be here.
Support comes from Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever, agstewardship.org. And the University of Albany Theater Program, working to train the next generation of performers, designers, technicians, playwrights, and stage managers, albany.edu/theater. Thanks again for being with us on Vox Pop. Thanks again to Morgan McGuire. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Your phones were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer, the aforementioned Jim Lavulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Food Friday, and we welcome back that human dynamo, Amy Halloran, and we'll hear all about the whole grain shortbread cookies that she's bringing. Oh, I can hardly wait. Stand by now for news.